Hello and welcome to this episode of Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt. This is the second part of our interview with Kara Cooney and Emily Cole. We're discussing sex, drugs, and rock and roll in ancient Egypt. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the first part, I really would recommend that you press pause on this, go back and download that so you'll be caught up. And without further ado, here's Kara and Emily.
I would pay to see that. That would be almost as good as when you had your TV show and we were watching the person spits in your face. And I just think, I know how Kara feels about germs. How is she holding it together?
He did. He spit right in my face. I was looking for that on YouTube the other day, and I can't find it.
Really?
That one on Relics. It's not up. I can't find it.
That was amazing.
I can't find the one with the shaman guy in Mexico City. Yeah.
He does a little...
He took some vodka into his mouth and spit the vodka onto my face. And the whole time he was talking to the ancestor, Arabic ancestor, I might add, in the corner, who was represented by a femur. So there we are. Yeah. Okay, so we'll start a tavern. We have no idea if the ancient Egyptians had taverns, but they had beer and wine.
I think there's this idea with a lot of, if you were consulting on a show, there's a lot of mixing together of classical and Egyptian. And it's clear that the Greek and Romans, they are the Romans especially, Pompeii is the best example. They had taverns. They have shop fronts with jars of liquor you could buy.
So why don't the Egyptians get taverns? I don't understand why we haven't found that.
We haven't found even, I mean, I work at Caranus, which is a Greco-Roman city in Egypt, and we do not have that kind of shop front. And elsewhere, we don't have that kind of shop front. We have shops, but the Egyptians also didn't store they stored their pottery on pot stands.
There would have been street food. That culture.
There might have been.
This is a hot place. People want to stay up late.
I'm going to die on my hill. Of temple activity.
Yeah. What is it with the temple? Okay, fine.
Because
with the monolithic understanding
that
of the world.
It is not a monolithic. To a temple except for priests and only temples.
No,
have
he's like
everything.
A freaking tavern.
Where did they do drinking and feasting? Where is the communal spaces?
In a festival concept, perhaps I would agree with you.
In the chapels.
Which chapels?
The chapels at Jerome Medina.
We have no storage. We have, actually, I should not say that. Somebody can go and check the excavation reports and see if we found large storage vessel pottery. Because that's what it would have been. It would have been those big, I mean, similar to Zeers.
Yeah,
Zeers are for water. And we know they had those. We know, I mean, and it's still something they have all over Egypt. You just have Zeers that are filled by, basically government-filled clean water. It would have been the same, but that's water. And we don't, at the chapels? I don't know if they're...
Right by the temple. People had seats. We know that they went
into that temple? Okay. To be fair, the Copts built a church over top of everything. But...
The Copts. Coptic people.
Monks then built a church. But we don't have a large area there for brewing beer within the temple.
But they could brew the beer elsewhere and bring it in. I have to believe that there's some place, some sort of tavern-like place where people can go
they're bringing it into the temple.
I just know the way people like to behave.
We do have chapels outside the temple, but those seem to be places of getting together.
Well, why do you have to drink in the chapel?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
A festival day, if you're trying to connect with your ancestors, sure, you're going to drink in your own family chapel. But if you're going to make some money and you're going to brew some beer and you're going to bring it to town.
Because, Kara, as you know, because you've read my book, it's all about using the religious system to gain social power and influence. So you pray together and you worship together.
And you drink
as a
together.
Way of showing your social status. And feasting plays a big part in this. And that's actually... We get into it and then we have to pull out. It's very, very silly.
Oh, you just pull out. Shit, you just did not.
Okay, I'm the dirty one.
I'm the dirty one. You went right into that one. I'm sorry. There is no way.
Pull out.
We get into it and we pull out.
Well, he's like, it's a military term. What?
Retreat!
Should we back it up?
Let's back it up. One of the things that we know is that we know that especially wealthier individuals would have had estates.
Yes.
And feasting and public feasting probably would have been a very important part of these societies. And
not a temple.
And I think, it's not a temple. And I think one of the things that we really lack is that type of... household archaeology, because we really don't have public spaces.
Marna.
It's worse than that.
Amarna is estates. We have estates with granaries. We know they were making bread, and I don't see why they weren't making beer in the same location. And those are large estates with grouped houses around them. And they had chapels at Amarna. Maybe they were carrying their beer over to the chapels. But why not?
That's also the very wealthy.
Have a party. Yes. Yeah, but you're just saying the very wealthy have estates, and that's what we have at Amarna.
I mean, Amarna is one of the best examples that we have of any sort of estates within an urban, semi-urban kind of context. We have nothing like that from Heliopolis or Memphis or Thebes.
But Amarna is also difficult because it's a completely new planned city. So how much can we apply that?
Exactly.
Yes, but the estates might have been pre-planned, but all the houses around it grew up. You can tell they just sort of sprouted where people need houses who are associated with these estates. And if you are a wealthy landowner, as you said, if you want to show your clout, why not have the people who work for you over to your estate? I mean, again, we're talking about
Eric's
desert.
Can I bring up Eric's book?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so
it's
I think
a good book.
Essentially what we're discussing and talking around is this notion of provincialism versus urbanism. Mm. And if you have an estate or you're out in the middle of nowhere called Tell El Amarna that your king compels you to go and live at, then it's a weird sort of combination of a state provincial living in a semi-urban environment that's kind of artificial and strange.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking of traditional Egypt, if you have an estate, a country manor, you're out in the middle of nowhere, dare I say, bum F Egypt? I almost said it. I did say it, but I didn't say it. And so you're out in the middle of nowhere, but it's a different kind of party atmosphere or a laid-back fun atmosphere, festival atmosphere, than what you would get in Memphis or Heliopolis or Thebes, where I do think there must have been, not just on the festival days and not just in association with the temples, some sort of drinking nighttime type atmosphere that we have no evidence of whatsoever because it's under millennia of Nile silt. It's gone.
Hmm? Yeah, I agree. It's not as simple as the great hymn to the Aten would have us believe that nighttime is a time of death where everyone goes in their house and waits for the next day.
Well, I mean, if I were going to feel that way, I'd probably drink too.
So sad. That's what the religion...
When everything was terrible.
That's what positivism gets you.
Yes.
It's a scary thing. Everyone thinks positivism. It's good to be positive. No. Because then when that thing that you're positive about is gone, then you just have to be super negative about its absence. It's depressing.
I was talking with our colleague at UCLA, Yaakov Dielemann, today, and we were talking about the Fiat Lux seminar he's doing on atheism and just studying atheism. And you know, it's looking at it not from any one religion and not even examining religion, but can atheism and morality and the sense of self-satisfaction exist? And that my comment was, so at the end, you're not just going to turn them all into depressed existentialists, right? because you take it to a
extent. I bet he didn't deny it.
He laughed and he said, no, hopefully not.
Yeah.
But how many times have you been asked by a student as you're teaching religion or some other class? But of course, people didn't believe this. There must have been some people who doubted this. There must have been some people who were like super skeptical. And you kind of say, there's absolutely no evidence of it. There is evidence of people being skeptical about all that you're doing working, but there's no evidence of a disbelief.
Or any kind of civil disobedience.
No, against the priests, against the temples, no.
If they thought it, they didn't write it down.
No.
The best thing I think we have, and you two may argue with me because a lot of people say it's not, but the dispute with a man, between a man and his Baal, between a man and his soul.
Such a beautiful, beautiful text.
And I would argue...
Very complicated.
And I would argue is actually a philosophical treatise. The whole point isn't that this doesn't exist. The whole point is that the afterlife is much better than here, so let's just die.
Oh, you really want to go into a man and his Baal?
No.
We don't have
not
to.
Tonight.
I can pull out my notes.
Not tonight.
I mean, it's a complicated tale. I need
that's
to prep
that. That's a different
that
podcast,
one.
I think.
And it's very solar, and it's very complicated.
It is. It's a
and
beautiful
it's Middle Kingdom in the beginning of solarism, and...
It's funny and sad at the same time. It'll make you laugh and cry. It does. It has its moments
it's everything.
Of humor.
It's everything
it really
for
is.
Everyone.
Yeah, I would say you give it its own podcast.
Okay, so we won't get into that. What should we go back to talking to?
Well,
we didn't talk about rock and roll. We didn't talk about the harpist.
That's true. We've
talked
about
drugs.
Songs.
We didn't talk about drugs.
We can
either.
Talk. We need to talk more about drugs.
We talked about
drugs or rock
a little
and roll.
Bit.
I don't know anything about musicians.
What do we have other than opium? I think that's about
hemp.
It.
There's got to be marijuana,
but I don't see any evidence for smoking.
No, but
you could eat it.
I think, though, that eating cannabis, that...
I've never done it, actually. I actually haven't done it.
Yeah, me either. But...
And really sections that'll be deleted from the podcast.
No, but I don't
keep that in there.
I will keep that in there. I don't know that cannabis would be strong enough. Because what they always say today is, do you ever hear now that marijuana is legal and older people who are, you know, were
in
hippies,
my day, this wasn't as strong.
They smoke and can't. Yeah. They'll go to Colorado and smoke, or they'll go to Oregon, and they're like, oh, this is back in. I won't say who I was having a conversation with, but somebody who I'm close with was saying, back in my day, you would smoke two or three joints and you would maybe get a little high. And, you know, my friend and I, we went and we said, oh, well, let's see what this is like. And man, I took two puffs and oh my God. So it's I have to imagine that back then.
Genetically modified.
They weren't getting much off of it.
I don't know of any Egyptian word that describes it. I think people have looked.
No, but we definitely, in the Near East again, we definitely have it.
We have it in Akkadian. In Akkadian, yeah, you can identify a word. Yeah. In Egyptian, you can't identify a word.
No, but I think what goes around comes around. I'm sure that they had. Again, opium is the big one.
Opium's the big one.
That they're importing.
Do you think
and
it's
they're
locally
using
produced?
It medicinally.
Do you think they ever
opium?
Produce it in Egypt?
I don't think so, no.
Why? It's too wet?
They import it from Turkey, don't they?
They import, and
Turkey's
from
a middleman?
Anatolia
man, or?
Afghanistan. No, directly.
Huh.
Yeah.
And you have the opium pots in the shape of the opium poppy flower, and it's easily transportable. You just have to dry that. I mean, it's just the seeds, right? You could create this paste, and it's easily transportable.
You can dry it
and keep it for a long period of time.
And make a tea out of it.
Yeah. Put it in your beer, have your great moot festival, get super drunk, create a child of the temple. Everybody's winning.
I don't think I have any others, though. I can't think of any.
I can't think of any, because most of the people I've been having a conversation with, they want to say that it's psilocybin mushrooms, and there's no evidence that I can find for that at all.
Well, I mean, but let me also say this. The Egyptians don't directly talk about initiation rites. They don't talk about what they do to get closer to God. You just read about Tutmosis III having some psychedelic experience, and when he realizes he's going to be king, where he sees exactly how the universe works. It's like Neo seeing the Matrix, and all of a sudden he understands everything. But there's no discussion of how they actually reach this strange state of mind. They wouldn't necessarily spell it out either.
I think we have enough medical texts and magical texts that
we
think we would
some
have recipes.
Some that in fact mention hemp. So apparently
really?
In the Ebers papyrus.
Oh, shite. We've already been shown up. Ebers papyrus?
The internet has shown us up, so that's okay. It's for, but again, it's for a medical recipe. And a lot of the opium, when they do talk about it, they talk about it in the context of being used for medicine. They're not going to talk about. They don't talk about the other.
I've never seen it. In, I mean, the trade is the opium
hemp seed.
And you can discuss
and again,
that. But you don't see opium. You don't see somebody getting in trouble for doing too much opium.
No.
You don't see somebody maligned in like a satire of the trades or a social text because he's strung out on opium.
No.
I've never seen it.
No.
It
and again, it's
happened.
Imported. It's
it must have happened.
Does it? It's imported. I don't think really this stuff is getting produced locally. How expensive it would be to have that kind of addiction.
But the Egyptians had money.
Sure. I'm sure some of them did. But you also, if you're not growing it locally, if it gets disrupted, or I don't think there was the same capacity. And they certainly don't, you're right, they don't talk about it. Drunkenness, they do talk about. And again, I think if they were going to talk about, I think they would talk about it if people.
And maybe
were.
It's the same word. You could
maybe,
drunk on
yeah,
beer
absolutely,
or drunk
it might
on.
Be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One thing I'll have to ask our colleague at UCLA, Carrie, who looks at wood. Some people have told me that acacia actually has DMT. And I've heard.
Is this like where you have to eat a boatload of cinnamon so that you can get completely off your?
So the people I've talked to,
you know, right? Isn't that like one of the things you're supposed to eat?
Yeah.
Like a whole jar of cinnamon, and then you'll.
Some people have said. So people I've asked different people, and some say that it does contain DMT.
They were getting all urban legends.
I know, it's crazy. No, it's a really interesting point, because if it does contain it, I was thinking about all the tree goddess imagery where you have people drinking from the tree, and if it actually could be produced that way. But the people who I've talked to who are ayahuasca aficionados say that you would actually...
I'm sorry, wait, what?
Sorry. So ayahuasca, whenever you hear people like go to South America.
Yes.
And they'll take, it sounds horrible, but they say it's life-changing. They'll have this.
Was that the one that Sting did and wrote all about yes. in his book? Okay, yes.
So tons of people have done this, and it's supposed to help people get over alcoholism and all these revelations. DMT, I think, is the active ingredient in ayahuasca. But apparently what the people who know about this have told me is that you need a reagent to actually get to that, to get to be potent.
I think it's kind of cute that none of us have any idea what we're talking about. It shows how we actually aren't addicts.
I'm sure we'll be informed.
Or drug fiends, and that all we really know about is drinking.
Whiskey.
And so on that note, I will make that noise, because that's all we seem to understand. And that's probably a good thing in why we have jobs and things like that. So it's all right.
But no, I mean, it is really interesting, because I have been thinking about this, because I think that there is a paucity of scholarship there.
Paucity, I love it. It's true.
I think that, yeah, that there is...
Opium.
Well,
the
it's
opium
also a topic that's fairly hypothetical. I mean, again, we've said, there's bits of evidence here and there's bits of evidence there. And I think a lot of scholars are hesitant to push that, because it does, you know... There are other explanations. It's always a ritual. It's not a drug-induced trance. It's a ritual.
Which
and
brings
that's
us...
a very
but that's
common
it. But this is interesting, you know? Because this is... So after you left us on the first podcast...
Uh-huh. Before we made fun of Demotic,
we were talking...
We made fun of you.
That's...
But no, you had started the conversation about how... There is often a pushback in our field against those subjects and things that are popular.
Yeah.
And Betsy, I think, has suffered that a little bit with her mood stuff, because it is popular. It is something that she's...
Yeah, but she has so much gravitas that she can pull it off.
There's also
just happened to uncover a temple of a porch of drunkenness, which doesn't happen every day. You uncover a porch of drunkenness, you have to figure out what the hell is going on. And she did it in an extraordinary holistic piece of scholarship that looks at the temple... You know, what used to be thought of as beautiful Feast of the Valley ritual drunkenness and drinking, and put it into the context of this moot ritual and a particular day of the year and all of the associated behaviors that might go along with this ritual. I mean,
but I think you touched on the important point. She did a holistic study of it. And so often these studies are, it's all about drugs, man.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, that's where the scholarship is
driven. She brings in our historical sources. She brings in hymnal sources. She brings in Dero Medina sources. She's looking at everything that she possibly
can. So there'll be a really thorough... German dissertation that will look at every instance.
There you go.
I'm sure there's an opium dissertation.
I'm sure there's an Egyptian opium dissertation. Well, I'm sure there's, I mean, in discussing sort of opium trade and things like that, that's something that existed that we know was sort of part of this international exchange that went on. The question of then what people did with the opium once it got to its country, its destination, is much more hypothetical, is much more... left to our imagination.
We
want the Egyptians to be much more, we want them to be...
We want them to be like us. We want to connect and to think that they...
Well, sort of, now we do. But I think 50 years ago, we wanted them to be something else. They were a people of the Bible. And I think so. I think that there was this a little bit we want to sanitize them a little bit.
There's still that. I was just reading something today. It made me sad, because this will come out in February, but I'm... researching for my Ramses podcast, which is probably going to be 5 parts.
God.
And I came across...
Do we get to play? Do we get to be alone?
Do you want to?
Yeah.
I thought... So here's what I would like to do.
Ramses.
Speaking of having kids and not knowing...
So I just did the context.
Who the daddy was.
Ramses.
Oh, my God. I thought... Okay.
Emily thinks just because he had a couple hundred wives that he was probably not a great husband. I don't think that's fair.
I think they all had a couple hundred wives by that point. They all had a couple hundred by that point.
Hey, that might have...
He can keep 100 women happy.
That could have worked out really well for that Hittite princess. You see him once or twice a year.
Poor women of the harem. I feel bad for them.
I wonder what the reality of that living situation would have been like.
And you wonder what it was like when an elite in the provinces said to his third daughter, "Love, I think that it's time to send you off to the king's harem. We're going to send you off to the Fayum." "No, Daddy, I don't want to go to the Fayum. I want to be a mistress of my own house. Please, father, no.
Then you're
going
join
to the Fayum,
the harem conspiracy, and you try to off the king. That is what you do.
But imagine entering that society as a young woman of 13 with your entourage from your provinces, from your backwoods BFE Egypt, right? Literally. And then you go in, and there are these badass women who've been there, who've got 20 years of experience, that have not the sexual prowess anymore because it's past their time, but they're there playing the political game to the hilt, and they will destroy you if you don't learn how to play it very, very quickly. And the king comes, what, 17 times a year, and you've got to attract him and get him to come over to your room or whatever. And
I think we've been watching a lot of the Tudors.
I know. He's got harems all around Egypt. How often is he going to go to one of these harems out in the Fayum? I'm not talking about his special wives that he brings with him when he goes to Nubia or when he goes to Memphis or Heliopolis. I'm talking about when he visits the harem, and they talk nothing about that.
Yeah.
The texts tell us nothing. The only thing we've got is Medinet Habu, Migdal, second and third floors, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And there's some sexy stuff going on in those rooms. Sexy, sexy stuff that also no one talks about.
Yeah,
Egyptologists do not discuss that stuff.
They don't. Yeah.
They do not discuss how Ramses III is reaching out his hand to the nether regions of these naked little queens while he's playing a Senate chess game. Like, just, you know, hanging out and having fun. And what is all of that about? Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, it's snafu like you read earlier. I'm bored. Get 20 naked women for me with well-developed breasts. Strip
Eric
them naked.
Eric really just wanted to come back to the fish nets. He's been trying repeatedly this whole podcast.
I can't believe I
to
got
circle back to the
I just
fish
can't
nets.
Believe I got in trouble for saying pull out. And you didn't call her on saying the king comes 17 times.
I didn't catch that one.
Emily started cracking up. I thought she was going to call you out on it.
This is going to be the most edited podcast
yes, it
you've
really
ever
will.
Done.
It
this
better.
Is going to be really bad.
I'll send it to you, too.
You're going to have to.
You can listen
yes,
before
please.
It goes up.
You're going to have to. This is crazy.
Shall we conclude with a dramatic reading?
Well, we have to get to the rock and roll, or else we haven't completed our sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So,
I mean, we have percussion. We
love
have flutes,
poetry.
We have
harps.
Yeah.
Sistra. I have a sistrum in my office that somebody gifted me, and I threw it out. No, it is. Well, not Egyptian. No.
Okay.
That such things don't exist.
We
anymore.
Had a guest visit in the fall.
Yeah, somebody gave me the sistrum, and then
the letter got thrown away.
Yeah,
I can't remember her
name.
What was her name?
No, you're going to have to edit so much.
Yeah.
No, I'll find it.
But my sistrum is loud.
Yeah.
And I've shaken it a couple of times, and damn, is this thing quite bone-chillingly loud. It's an extraordinary thing.
They're shown on the walls with their mouths open. There's clearly singing going on with all this music.
Well, and the sistrum is a sexual piece, right? And Gay Robbins has described this very well as round pieces of metal pierced by long pieces of metal. I'm not the one doing it. She's the one that described it.
I'm not saying anything.
And so, and then you shake it, and somehow this simulates the motion of sex, and you're supposed to shake it in a certain way. It is meant to be a very sexual instrument. So it goes along with the whole thing.
It's Heidi Kopp-Jung.
There you go.
From Universität Trier.
Heidi Kopp-Jung.
Yeah. And she sings, she did a rendition of the Egyptian love song. So she put them to music and performed them. So they have, I mean, there's sort of the poetry is there. The lyricism is there.
Yeah, she's great.
We just
she's...
don't have any musical notation.
Yeah.
So...
No, it's.
And we have the love songs. We have the lyrics, if you like, assuming
which,
that they were
which
sung.
appear to be.
They really should be called sex songs.
They appear
be
to be rhythmic. There's not rhyming, but there does appear to be rhythm and meter.
It's more about. Don't do you agree?
They're
it's more about sex
songs.
Than it is
They're
about love.
They're not all about walking in the marshes. There's a lot of teasing and sort of.
There's a lot of hair brushing.
They strike me as very falling off.
It's very flirty,
very kind of like the Middle East today. Mm. It's very what we would think. I mean, we're perhaps a bit jaded in the West, and sex is more in your face. But
we're just generalizing a bit. It's all good.
I'm sorry. Is this inappropriate? Do I need to edit more? no, I just mean it's you know, she snares all the men who with her locks of hair like real lapis lazuli as she walks by. They're trapped like birds. You know, it is very kind of sweet, innocent flirting in some cases. In other cases, it's a young girl and an older man type stuff.
Scary and yeah.
They're not in here.
There's love songs in there.
No, some of the love songs get a little rapey.
They get a little stalkery. Yeah. I don't know if they go so far as rapey, but...
You just see some creepy guy following around just waiting for that festival of drunkenness.
Well, and the erotic papyrus has the older balding man.
I didn't think we were going to talk about Turin. Yeah. I didn't think you'd want to... Okay, talk about Turin.
Okay, so everyone please Google right now. Go to your computers and Google Turin, T-U-R-I-N, erotic, you can spell that, papyrus. And you'll be shocked at what your Egyptologist next door did not tell you. And it's, this was once taught by a colleague at UCLA who assigned it in advance. Yeah, he assigned it in advance, but he just said, everyone look at it at home. And then he wouldn't show pictures of the papyrus in class because it was too much. And then everyone had to discuss around what they had seen and talk about the general themes without actually showing the papyrus.
It's like everyone having to read Horace and Seth with their Egyptology professor.
I love reading Horace and Seth.
Every time.
I love reading the Heretic. I love reading translation. I love reading Horace and Seth. It's one of the most wonderful tales there ever.
But the turpies, I mean, it's
only a Harper Steele.
It's, I mean, you've got necrophilia. You've got a woman on top of a mummy.
Where do you have necrophilia?
In the top left.
Oh, of course. How could I have missed that?
You've got a guy who looks like he's masturbating underneath.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, you've got all kinds of sexual positions. Quite extraordinary. There's a psychedelic mushroom right there.
Don't.
She's on top of a psychedelic mushroom.
That's a tree.
Yeah. Well, she's on top of something.
It's not a mushroom.
Please do not view this papyrus if there are children present. It's a very, very sexy papyrus. And the convolvulus leaves, those are all meant to be vaginal stand-ins.
The woman pulling a chariot, acting as the horse.
I know. Oh, my God.
And
you wonder, is it meant to be funny? It must have been meant... It must have been funny to people. And is this associated with...
Well, we have lots of
with the temple of the porch of drunkenness, the moot festival, and all of that.
The ostraca that are figurative, several of those are sexual as well. And there are little sort of...
But this is fancy.
Oh, this is fancy.
Just drawing a sex act is something that I think people around the world everywhere do independently.
It is, and this is the classy.
What really gets me is the baldness.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we just
don't... And again, that is very similar to what you see on those sort of crude, on the smaller ostraca. It's not, I don't think it's as far away. I agree, this is... I mean, beautifully painted,
and the women's hair and wigs are quite fancy and special. I mean,
art history
geek
out on it. It is a beautifully made papyrus.
Yeah,
it's all these poor young-looking women with these old men.
I know, it's awful. Don't forget, what did the agricultural state invent?
We're judging.
It invented the institution of marriage economically, and it invented prostitution.
Shh, Emily's shaming us.
I'm sorry.
I'm not. I'm just saying. Again, we're looking at it from our Judeo-Christian. Our perspective. Again, we're bringing in all of our history.
No, she has a point. And if we're living in a one-room hovel with our entire nuclear family, then sexuality is something you don't shield from children. This is something that everybody is exposed to. It's normal.
We're also dealing with a society, though, where most people are probably, men are probably dying if they make it past childhood, 35, 40.
Yeah.
I don't think we're having a lot of... I don't think there's probably a plethora of balding men.
Yeah. But, okay.
I mean, maybe nobles, yes, they're living longer, they're better, and that's what I think this is depicting. Yeah. It's depicting probably wealthy noblemen's tastes.
And women would have married
or
around...
Or the same sort of idea that we think that these are sort of... I mean, it might be that this is sort of making fun or poking fun at this idea of lecherous old men.
I think that that's a big part of it, yeah.
It's possible. It's not that.
And girls were marrying at 12 or 13.
This papyrus itself is unique.
Do we agree girls were marrying around 12 or 13 and men were marrying around 18, 19?
Yeah.
And remarriage was possible and divorce was possible.
Yeah, and families were huge. I mean, when you're talking about the number, like you could be 16 and your older brother could be 45. And so when you're marrying sort of, you're surrounded by younger people and older.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's also a different structure because here we have the idea that that marriage means going out of the household, and for them, you just put up another wall, maybe just push the house out.
If you're a man, if you're a woman, you're going to the other household. Yeah. You are still leaving.
Has anybody tried to even hypothesize on how many, what the percentage of women who died in childbirth was?
for Egypt? I'm sure they have, but I don't know.
I think I've seen anywhere from 25% to 50%.
Between certain ages?
I think that's high. Died of childbirth, just a blanket statement like that.
25%
that of the women who lived, half of them would have died in childbirth.
25 to 50%.
50 seems high.
Dying from childbirth or complications of child.
Maybe not the first. At any point. Yeah, any pregnancy, possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a.
Those are something
we don't think about as much.
I never understand those studies either. I think they're incredibly hard and speculative.
I don't think they're that speculative.
Well, what you have to do is you have to look at a pre-modern Egyptian society, look at the numbers before antibiotics and sulfur drugs, and then see what you've got.
We have numbers for other periods. It's still the number one sort of worry.
This has been our most rambling podcast so far, don't you think?
We drank a lot to start. Before we ever started, we were all...
We should have started our podcast earlier.
No, this was great. This is great.
You're going to have to... This one, you're going to
This is going
to
be a tough one to edit.
People like our banter.
I don't know, man. This was pretty out there. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We kind of ignored the rock and roll. None of us are... I'm not a musician. Are you a musician? No, we're like,
Emily can sing.
And we just kind of ignored that part. We didn't even talk about the fat harpist in the Middle Kingdom show at the Met. Oh. Poor guy. Poor fat harpist.
Who looks like he can barely play because he can barely reach the strings.
I bet that guy could play.
And I was thinking, how many images do we see of harpists and even the blind harpists where they're not shown really just morbidly obese like that, but they are shown with fat rolls.
Or blind.
But fat rolls just could mean that you're old. We're all getting fat rolls the older we get. That's okay. It means that we're still alive. It's a wonderful thing. Be proud of your fat rolls, dear podcast listeners.
I have heard those songs that are in the tombs of old, what they tell in extolling life on earth, in belittling the land of the dead. Why is this done to the land of eternity? These are very uplifting. The right and just that has no terrors. Strife is abhorrent to it. No one girds himself against his fellow. This land has no opponent. All our kinsmen rest in it since the time of first beginning. Those to be born to millions of millions, all of them will come to it. Yeah, the Harpers were not happy people.
Those Harper songs are sad.
They are really sad.
They're downers. Yeah. But sometimes, and this is also scientifically established, and I don't remember where I read it, to your podcast listeners, I don't remember where I read it, but that listening to sad music can be uplifting. It makes you feel better.
It has not been understood.
And those songs are seriously depressing.
When you're
depressed, everyone weep. It's a cathartic moment, and then everyone will be uplifted in that.
Listen to Sarah McLachlan, and you just cry.
That SPCA commercial.
Exactly.
Or the other
throw a little in the arms. And
so here, this is a better one. The one, the sister without peer, the handsomest of all. She looks like the rising morning star at the start of a happy year, shining bright, fair of skin. Lovely the look of her eyes, sweet the speech of her lips. She has not a word too much.
No, don't talk too much. Don't talk. Shh.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Upright neck, shining breast, hair true lapis lazuli, arms surpassing gold, fingers like lotus buds, heavy thighs, narrow waist. They like
their thighs and butt. Yeah, it's true.
Her legs parade her beauty. With graceful step, she treads the ground, captures my heart with her movements. She causes all men's necks to turn about her to see her.
She's like a belly dancer. This is not a love poem. It's a poem.
Joy.
There's anything wrong with that, but it's not a love poem.
Joy has he who embraced her. He is like the first of men. When she steps outside, she seems like that other one.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Like my note says, like the soul.
The love poems are also problematic language-wise. Yeah. Much like Setnet, we have holes in all the important places.
Yeah, it's true.
I read the one, the boy for the girl. Does somebody want to read the girl says about the boy?
I don't know if I can read a love poem with you, Eric, and then I'm the girl and you're the boy. That would make me feel uncomfortable.
Or I can't do it either.
Oh, my God.
It's like having your sister read you a love poem.
I know. They do call each other brother and sister, which we must point out.
I'll read it.
Yeah, because I feel uncomfortable.
Can you use your high voice again?
No. I feel uncomfortable.
My brother torments my heart with his voice. He makes sickness take hold of me. He is a neighbor to my mother's house, and I cannot go to him. There you go, Kara.
Yeah, she's not allowed. She cannot go.
Mother is right in charging him thus. Give up seeing her. It pains my heart to think of him. I am possessed by love of him. Truly, he is a foolish
one. Maybe a goddamn agricultural
maybe
state.
Maybe it's Romeo and Juliet. We don't know.
It's just you got to control the womb when you've got private property passed down the patriarchal line.
Maybe
that's
he's
all I'm saying.
And she knows she can do better.
Maybe. Here's a weird one.
Do better. That's
but I resemble him. What does that mean? But I resemble him. He knows not my wish to embrace him, or he would write to my mother. Brother, I am promised to you by the gold of women. Come to me that I see your beauty.
What's the gold
Father,
of women?
Mother sexy, will sexy rejoice. Man. My people will hail you all together. They will hail you, oh my brother. Gold of women is an allusion to Hathor, I believe.
Yeah, but allusion to what of Hathor?
Allusion to what of Hathor?
Does Miriam look down?
You're looking in the footnote?
Hathor, patroness of love, was called the gold, or the golden one.
Yeah, but I think there's something more to it, but that's fine. I think it's a little more sexy than that.
Sexy, sexy.
Yeah, I do.
Those are the first two stanzas. There's more, but
yeah, but
I think they get
but
the
see,
point.
They can't have each other. They're not allowed to have each other, and they long for each other, and it's unrequited, and they can't
yeah,
they can't go there. That, so we come full circle.
We do,
and so it means that we have established. Thank you, Eric, for establishing virginity.
What?
In
no mention
Egypt.
Of virginity
no
in this poem. Zero. Nice try.
But she's not been embraced
zero
yet. No one's embracing
virginity.
Her, and thus it
there
seems
is mention of a promise, and I'd be curious to know what word that is in Egyptian.
Oh yeah.
But there's no mention of virginity. She just can't see this boy.
But see, what does that mean to see a boy and to meet with a boy? But
know.
Then
the neighbor of my mother's house. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a boy next door.
Do you want to read a rapey one?
No.
Yeah, I want to read a rapey one.
I want to read a rapey one.
Okay.
Oh, that you came to your sister swiftly, like a bounding gazelle in the wild. Its feet reel, its limbs are weary. Terror has entered a bot its
terror?
Body.
Terror?
Terror.
Terror.
A hunter pursues
terror has entered the body.
Shh, I'm drinking. A hunter pursues it with his hounds. They do not see it in its dust. It sees a resting place as a trap. It takes the river as a road. May you attain her hiding place. Before your hand is kissed four times as you pursue your sister's love. The golden gives her to you, my friend.
Mm-hmm. The golden. Something. It's something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just Hathor. That's just a bunch of Victorian Egyptologists who don't want to talk about what that is.
See, again, there's a lot of sanitizing
oh,
going
yes.
on in all of this
oh, yes.
stuff.
Ironic that so much of the most overt Egyptian sexual visual expression is in the Ashmolean. And so what you have here is, let's go to the next gallery, shall we?
I have to read
just
one
have
more.
Have to go to Naples and their special pay extra for all the sexy, sexy
go.
Time room.
For Pompeii, yes.
Yeah.
I want
no,
to
no, for in the museum. Have you been
in the
to
Museo
the,
Archaeological?
Yeah, they have
yes,
a special
yes.
room where you have to, but it's not all Pompeii.
But most of it is.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Most of it. There, most of it is. But
I'm
it's great, yes.
I'm going to read a bitter man one.
Okay.
We can close with that.
And we'll close with the bitter man. Okay, go.
How well she knows to cast the noose and yet not pay the cattle tax.
What? Oh, she. Oh, you buy the milk, get it for free. Or
she
wait,
casts,
wait, she's not paying the tax?
No, it's
that's
saying
horrible.
She's a tease.
I get it.
And of course, and back to your
I
hair.
I just used the wrong illusion. I apologize to your podcast listeners. Go on.
She casts the noose on me with her hair. She captures me with her eye. She curbs me with her necklace. She brands me with her seal ring.
Ooh, that's scary, that last bit. It was like vampiric.
Yeah.
And on that note.
Goes both ways.
Goes both ways?
Yeah.
No, nothing goes both ways in complex societies. Women always get screwed. I'm just saying. On that feminist note.
The one was sweet. They like each other. It's a back and forth.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to be together because of the
summer
goddamn
loving.
Agricultural state.
They're singing back and forth.
And then we have a rapey one.
But you know
then
how in that song they have two really different ideas of what happened over the summer? Just saying.
So that's next true. Week we'll be discussing Greece and ancient Egypt. Oh my God.
We didn't talk about cones, incense cones. Speaking of drugs,
wait.
We didn't talk about sniffing lotuses and all the the fat burning cones. No, we don't believe any of that.
I don't think that sniffing lotuses,
smelling
will
the perfume flowers,
I don't think that's going to get you
speaking
high.
Speaking of euphemisms,
yeah, I think it's the gold. Mm-hmm. I think it's the gold. Those
whatever
the gold is, yeah. I think when you're sniffing gold a flower, but the women are sniffing flowers too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It demands more
melting
thought.
Incense over your head. And
you know what's very
cones of fat.
Yeah.
I can't think. We do have evidence for homosexuality on the male part. We don't. There's nothing I can think of with two women.
No.
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 Isn't that interesting?
But it's generally been more. I think female homosexuality has always been sort of, oh, it's the ghetto, it's a phase.
Oh, I'm sure it happened in the harem.
Yeah.
I know. I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure it did, but.
And you don't see it in that in the one harem depiction set of harem depictions that we have from Medinet-Habu, Ramses III. I don't think you have anything with females with females. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
No.
It's only the king interacting with those females. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. You just have the naked ladies dancing together. That's it.
Yeah.
They're naked playing chess. I don't understand what the problem is. It's fine. It's what the king wants.
It's what the king wants.
It's good to be king.
Better that than making the poor girls row you around on a boat. Some lecherous old man.
And to conclude the podcast,
strip naked.
We come back yet again to the fishnet.
That story.
And on that note,
that story,
podcast listeners,
that story is just crazy.
We bid you good night.
Oh, so much fun. I have to tell you that for me personally, these are my favorite episodes to do. It's just a lot of fun being able to sit down with my colleagues and discuss some of this stuff in a fun way and really to let all of you see how it is that we actually discuss those in our personal life. Only so much of our time is spent in conference settings and formal environments, and even at conferences, it's usually the fun meetings like this where it's after hours and we're discussing things over wine or over beer or over whiskey as we drink here. So I really hope that this translates to you all as well and that you all enjoyed this as much as I did. Thank you for listening to this episode of Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you like the podcast, please subscribe to it and rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever format you listen to it on if they allow that. If you have any questions or any feedback you'd like answered on the podcast, please, you can feel free to get in contact with me on ericsguidetoancientegypt.com or also through our Facebook page, Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt, or on Twitter at Eric's Egypt. I also have an audience survey on my Twitter and Facebook pages, so if you'd like to give me any suggestions or feedback there, please feel free, and thanks for listening.